right, welcome to the Snack Bar Games Podcast. I'm Graham, and today I'm here with Andrew.
Hello.
And Sean.
Yo.
So, this is kind of the reboot of the podcast, and...
Well, we could start with PSN, but I think everyone's tired of that by now.
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm tired of people talking about PSN, even more than I'm tired of, you know, PSN being down. And, you know, I'm not even like a guy who really cares that much about online multiplayer, but I have a crippling addiction to the PlayStation Store, and really any store.
I'm the same way. I mean, honestly, at this point, it's just kind of a mess, and I'm just sick of hearing about it. I really want just to go back up and everyone to stop complaining. Although even when it goes back up, I don't think people will stop complaining. So.
Yeah, well, I'm just hoping that they don't give away a game I already bought. That's all I ask for. It's going to be tough, though. I don't know.
I haven't bought any games from them except for PlayStation 1 Classics. So no matter what they give away, I'm good. I just want to put my PlayStation Classics on my PSP that I got the day it went down.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you'll be able to do that later this week. We'll see how that goes. Mm-hmm. But, so everybody's tired of hearing about PSN, so we don't talk about PSN that much. What we will talk about is all these rumors of the new Nintendo console. They're crazy. It can't be true. It's like the system is going to be 1080p, and It's not going to be 1080p. And it's going to have a big hard drive, and it's going to have an 8 gig hard drive, and it's going to have no hard drive. And it's going to have a touchscreen in the controller, and that's going to have motion controls, and it's not going to have either of those things.
And the controller will act as a projector for the wall.
Right, yes.
Do you remember before the Wii came out, when it was called The Revolution, there was that video that came out that was like, you wore like this headset on, and it was like this virtual projection of the game. It just goes to show how crazy rumors can get. Before a big console announcement.
That was a pretty impressive video, though.
It was. I wonder who actually made it.
I remember reading about that. It was basically like this guy's demo reel. It was just like, let me impress everyone with my graphics. Maybe it worked out for him. I had to check in on that. But, I mean, I think the problem now is since the Wii was so crazy, anything is believable. Especially with Nintendo. It's like, no one in their right mind would put a screen on the controller and motion controls and buttons and have it function as a sensor bar for some reason. But you know what? I can't put it past Nintendo.
Yeah, I think if anyone could pull it off, or at least somewhat pull it off, it's them.
Yeah, so, okay, let's go down spec by spec and just say whether we think, you know, what we think is going to happen. Clearly there's that touchscreen in a controller. Do you think that's an actual thing, or is that just someone being crazy?
If they're going to do anything, I mean, that... It seems like it's going towards what they've been working on with all the handheld, the console connectivity, especially with the DS, which they never really capitalized on with the Wii to DS connectivity. So it could be something like that. I mean, I could see it happening.
It's much more believable than some of the things that they've talked that are rumors. I would have real issues with it if there's not some kind of tactile feel to the pushing of the, to doing anything on the touchscreen. For a console controller, it needs to have something tactile.
Right. Well, the rumor is that it would still have buttons and it would just have a screen in the middle, which I would be fine with. Certainly, if the whole thing is a screen, I'm gonna hate it. Because even with tactile feedback, like on phones and things like that, it's just you can't hit buttons on phones. It's just it doesn't work nearly as well.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I can't imagine playing like the next Mario or Zelda like that. It just doesn't seem like it would work properly.
The other thing they have to pay attention to is the size of the controller. They can't make it as big or uncomfortable as the Dreamcast or original Xbox controller. That's what doomed the N64 originally.
Well, that thing's going to have a 7-inch screen in it. I can't imagine it being that small. I feel like a 7-inch screen is pretty heavy.
That is true. That's almost as big as an iPad.
My real question with putting the screen in the controller is, if you're going to have this and you're going to have like four players with this controller, how expensive is this controller going to be?
Who knows, really. If you bought the Wiimote and then the Nunchuck, that was, what, $60 total? So, who knows, 80 to 100 per controller, maybe more?
I I mean, I would be fine with it. It's something where you invest into hardware, and then that makes all the games you buy for the next 5 years a lot cooler. But I feel like it's going to be a big barrier to entry if the system comes with one controller, and you get another controller, it's like buying a whole system.
It depends on who they're appealing to. I mean, clearly they're trying to go back to, or at least I would assume they're going to try to go back to some of their hardcore fan base that have kind of felt like left out with the Wii. I mean, I don't know if they're going to be able to bring that Wii audience back in, or they're just going to keep selling the Wii at discounted prices to try to continue to capitalize on that.
Yeah, while we're speaking about the Wii at discounted prices, there's all this news about essentially they're reviving the Player's Choice line with $20 Wii games. And yeah, well, a couple of them, you know, the value's really gone down. You know, it's got Animal Crossing in there and things like that. But Super Smash Bros. Was still selling at $50 until they made that announcement. So that's...
I'm pretty sure Twilight Princess was still selling at 40 or 50 also. And that was a launch game.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like they're definitely going to make a push in the next couple of years to sell the Wii at a low price point. I don't know, with them starting this right now, I'm not sure they're going to be able to sell it at a low price point now and then late 2012 when we see likely to see this new system.
They could have put it down to $100 with the game, then sell it like what Sony's doing with PS2, so the legacy system.
I could see that happening. I mean, honestly, there's probably still people out there who, believe it or not, don't own a Wii but might want to.
Whoa.
It's crazy.
You've blown my mind. There's someone out there that doesn't have
one. PS2 continues to sell. I mean, people are still buying those. I don't know if they're replacing old ones or what, but I mean, I can see the Wii being something like that. So I think Sean's right in that regard.
Yeah, another thing that interested me about these rumors is the storage medium for the discs. It seems like that based on how large they're saying the discs can be, it seems like they're moving to Blu-ray.
Sounds like it.
I wonder if they're actually going to do that, and then I also wonder if they're going to do the same half step that they did last generation with using the format but not paying to actually let it play discs.
I believe it. I think they'll finally be able to play DVDs but not Blu-rays, so that'll be the next system.
Oh, gosh. Oh, look, you can play DVDs. I can't imagine them even wanting to do that. Yeah, the most troubling rumor I've seen is that it would only have 8 gigs of storage. Now, it'd be flash storage, and that'd be nice, and it'd be expandable with SD cards, but I feel like that's, if they're really trying to appeal to the West with a system, you know, that has the capabilities of the other consoles, they're really going to need a lot more storage space.
Yeah.
You're going to need at least 40 or 60.
Yeah, I mean, even just 20. I mean, it depends on how big the focus is on downloadable content. If you're going to have, like, the Call of Duties and the what have yous on the new system, they're probably going to need a lot of space for map packs and all the DLC and all the big games, like downloadable games and demos that come out. So it depends on what they're going for with it.
Yeah, my thought on who they're going after is they have to go after the hardcore, because I would bet that about half the people who bought a Wii aren't used to this generational thing. And they're going to be like, well, why am I buying a new system when I just bought one 4 years ago?
Yeah, that could be true.
The hardcore people are the ones that are used to buying new hardware every few years.
Not only that, I feel like they definitely have to appeal to the hardcore at launch. Of the new system, just because I know a lot of people bought their Wii due to the potential of the system, and they picked up a Nintendo game every year or so. But, you know, there's all these jokes about it collecting dust, but it's based somewhat in reality that, you know, there really wasn't that string of releases for the core. And whether this new system's geared toward the core or not, I think they really have to launch with something that has the potential to be a good core system to just bring back some of those people.
So do you think we'll be seeing Skyward Sword on the next Nintendo system, or is that still going to come out for the Wii?
I just get this feeling that they're going to support motion controls but not focus on it in the next generation. And Skyward Sword is just such a Wii game.
Yeah.
It's just entirely based on that interface, where I think, like, you know, the system will probably sync with Wii remotes and just run that way. I can't imagine them pushing it again. I mean, for one thing, I definitely see it coming out this holiday season.
I would hope so.
There's no way, right? I mean, as I say this, I'm just like, no. No, don't let that happen.
From what I heard, it was fairly well done at E3 last year and at the conference last year, so I don't see why it would take more than a year longer to finish it.
Yeah, well, it definitely seems done, but there are a lot of things that seem done that aren't quite done. They make a really good, you know, area.
Yeah.
But and they always take their time with Zelda, but I really hope that they're done and that we'll see it this holiday season.
I hope so,
well,
too.
They're betting on it for their earning report, so I hope for their sake it is, too. Did you guys hear about the rumor for Grand Theft Auto V to be possibly a Nintendo exclusive for their next system?
I can't imagine this being true.
It does seem weird.
That would be weird, but I can't see it being exclusive, but I'd love to see it actually hit the system maybe at launch and co-launch with the PS3 and 360 versions.
That would be a big deal.
It would be.
Yeah.
I mean,
I remember when Chinatown Wars came out in the DS, that Nintendo was really trying to push, you know, hey, we finally have a Grand Theft Auto, but they didn't really have a Grand Theft Auto, and I think maybe they've been working with, you know, Rockstar for a couple years to try to make it a reality, but there's no way that they're not going to release that on Xbox.
Yeah, I can't see that being an exclusive, but it would be a great launch title. I mean, it would really get the message out there that what the audience are going for, and I mean, just go imagine going picking up that system with Grand Theft Auto and then Mario or something like that. It would be weird, but you know, I can kind of see it.
I would take a launch with Grand Theft Auto and Star Fox. That would be the best launch ever.
I would love a new Star Fox, but who knows at this point.
I can't see that being a system seller. I mean, basically they've been sitting on the 3DS Star Fox. That thing was clearly done, you know, probably late last year. They've been sitting on that for a while to try to just have it, you know, appease the core later, a lot like they do with, you know, Metroid releases.
Yeah.
That it's never a big seller, but it's always a big, you know, core hype series and, you know, just kind of sprinkle it around to make people happy. I can't imagine putting that at the launch of a system.
It'd bring back the core Nintendo fanboys.
There are a lot of things that would bring back the core Nintendo fanboys.
That's true.
You guys think it'll be the same, in terms of power, the same as the PS3 and 360, or are we going to see a slight graphical leap?
I think it's got to be.
Really think so?
Here's my problem with the same as the PS3 and the 360. The PS3 and the 360 aren't exactly that comparable, power-wise. I mean, we're seeing the same games on both, just because that's how the development process works, you know.
Yeah.
You'll have your 360 version, then they'll port it to PS3 is essentially what happened. But the PS3 has a little more power to it, and I wouldn't be surprised if the new Nintendo system matched the PS3's capabilities and kind of left the 360 with some problems, especially, you know, if they're going to go with Blu-ray discs and have a lot more storage space.
Yeah, I see this as kind of their way of finally approaching HD, you know. 5 years later, but you know, better late than never.
Yeah, plus making it just as powerful as the others will definitely make it easier to port games to it. If they're not going to make it for the Wii, at least they'll be able to port them over and have a decent port.
And I think another problem with the Wii that the developers had is that if they wanted to make a game for it that was kind of like that was the same as the other consoles, they would need to like adapt it to that control scheme because there was no. You have the classic controller, but you know, Nintendo wants games that supported the motion control, so you need, with the new console, a way to support both the, you know, the regular controller and whatever their new controller, I mean, their touchscreen thing is going to do. So I could see that happening.
It's all basically just guessing at this point until June, and we will be there and let you know how it is, whatever it is. I'm sure it'll be great, or we'll think it's great and then come to our senses a couple days later.
Who knows?
Games Podcast. Find us on the web at snackbar-games.com.
Alright, so now we're just going to talk a bit about what we've been playing. We'll start with Sean. Sean, what have you been working on?
I've been working on some of my backlog of DS and Game Boy Advance games. Especially after I bought 10 Game Boy Advance games during GameStop's buy two get two free sale.
Well, I know you've been reviewing Super Monkey Ball 3D.
Oh man!
And I've been commiserating with you through that one. I had to do the last one, and it seems like it's going to be so much fun. And you know, the first games were actually kind of fun. They were fresh. They were different. But it seems like this is just more of the same, right?
Pretty much. The main game is the same as it's been for the last 7-8 games. It's just, it feels a little shorter because the levels take less than a minute each to finish. That's something you don't fall off the map over and over again like I tend to.
Yeah, and then it takes about, you know, an hour and a half, yeah. Depending on...
Especially if you have the 3D turned on. Because the 3D works. Oh. For that mode, the 3D really works. You see it, and there's depth to it. But it works so well that I move my head, and then it kills the screen, and I fall off because I don't know where I am anymore. Can't see anything.
Yeah. I've experienced that too. It's going to be that thing where the 3D is so good that you think, like, I can just look under the back of that screen and see just a little bit more of what's going on back there. It's like, what's back there? I did that a lot with Madden at launch, and while that game was otherwise pretty abysmal, you know, the 3D was really cool, and you're just like, I want to see, like, 10 or 15 yards up the field. Then you just lean down. It's like, what am I doing? I'm leaning down.
Yeah, and then you're like, now I can't see anything.
That's going to be an issue with that system.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the rest of the modes were there, and that's all you can really say for them.
Andrew, I know you've been heavy into Portal 2, so let's go ahead and... But here's what we're going to do. We're going to try to... Don't spoil the game.
Yes, I haven't played it yet.
Or any of the dialogue, or the puzzles, or the characters, or, like, the graphics, or...
Or the music.
Any of the gameplay or the menu screens.
Go. Okay, all right. I can't even talk about the menu. Oh man, all right. That changes everything. No, but but seriously, it's pretty amazing. I mean, honestly, when I got into it, I wasn't sure what to expect. I mean, Portal. I mean, have you two played Portal the original? I would assume so.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was such a simple, short, you know. Experience, and it really didn't go beyond that. It was just hard to imagine a full length game like that. But
I mean, it was basically like a student project, yeah. Just you know, polished just a little bit and then thrown on a disc with Half-Life.
Yeah, exactly. It impressed for what it was, and I think it was a really, really great game. But I just wasn't sure. I mean, I was excited. Don't get me wrong, but I wasn't sure if it would tend to drag. If I would get sick of certain characters or other characters, but they split it up so perfectly, and it's kind of split up into like three different parts, and without spoiling anything, they introduce the old elements from the first game, and it takes a little while to get back into it, but once you're into it, maybe 10 minutes, you're shooting portals like a pro, and then of course they throw something new at you. Give you time to master that, and then they throw something else at you, and then by the end of the game, you have all these different elements together, and it works so well. And it just,
yeah,
it just surprised me just how well the game is paced, and yeah, it is really funny. It honestly makes the first game feel like just like a prototype, which it kind of is, but
yeah. Well, I feel bad because I haven't gotten to play it yet. I have it sitting right over here, but I'm gonna get to it. But I was just wondering, because the first game, since it was so short. It generally kind of ramped up its gameplay really quickly. So I was wondering how 2 handles that. Does it kind of slow things down and explore more of the nuance, this or that, or does it just kind of rapid fire, like ramp up crazy, keep adding things? Just
it kind of does a bit of both. Like for the first part, like I said, it introduces all the stuff you remember from the first game, or reintroduces, and then slowly begins to add new things. And then once you get that down. They're like, okay, here's something new, and then it slows up a bit. You get used to that, and then you slowly begin to speed up again. Learn that, and then they kind of continue to do that with new elements. They just kind of combine everything together at the end, and by the end of it, you might think it's so overwhelming to have these three different things that were totally separate before all together in the same room. But you really know it really really well, and I don't know, it just works so flawlessly. I don't know how else to put it without spoiling anything. It's
yeah, well, I'm really excited to play it. But, yeah, I've been spending my week knee-deep in MotorStorm Apocalypse, the review went up on the site.
Mm-hmm.
That game seems like it's going to be so good. It just...
How good is this compared to the first... Well, there's three of them, but the first two on the PS3.
It's basically like you take Pacific Rift, and then you just put random debris everywhere. I think a lot of the focus on the game was making it look really, really cool in 3D, and it does. I don't actually have a 3D TV at home, but I played it before in 3D, and it looks really cool. You know, it's one of those things like you know, whenever you get really want to show off your home theater, you have, like, you know, big movies with explosions and things like that.
Yeah.
This is the game equivalent of that. But as far as a game goes, like, the fun of a MotorStorm game is really finding the track as it goes, you know, around and, you know, learning the terrain and, you know, knowing you can go up with a little bike or slog through the mud or things like that. With Apocalypse, there's just... There are buildings everywhere, and it's unfortunate because you can't just run through things. Even if you're in, like, the crazy big rig, there's a little pipe sticking up, so you immediately crash into that. But it's indistinguishable from all the rubble, and it's frustrating. And then, you know, there's this mechanic where everything kind of, you know, like split second, except for it's all at once. Like, the entire track just kind of collapses near the end, and there's, like, a different track, which is... fine, except for, you know, there are already 6 or 7 paths to get through it, then why do you need another 6 or 7 just for one lap? It's a little strange.
It kind of seems like a gimmick just to throw into the game, so just to see them feel like more MotorStorm.
They definitely just saw Split Second and said, oh, that's cool, let's put that in our game, and didn't really think about whether that would work or not. Just, let's put it in there.
I was never a huge fan of the series, but I appreciated what they were trying to do, but with Apocalypse, it just seems like they're making it more difficult. You know, like, you learn this track, and then all of a sudden, oh, now it's completely different, and then the path you once took is slightly changed to the point where it might, like, completely stop you.
Right. Now, I mean, that would be cool for a game, you know, like, it was cool in a game like Split Second, because there's basically one track, you know? But it's just, it seems unnecessary in this game. That said, everything looks really cool. You know, the game looks really nice. You can customize everything. There's crazy, like, they took perks, you know. I really like having that in there for online, though I didn't get to do much online. But I really like that they put that in there and that you can customize, you know, playing online and unlock a lot of things online. There's a lot to this game if there weren't just 3 or 4 little frustrating things that you encounter every 15 or 20 seconds.
Graphics over gameplay things, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think that... But the sad thing is MotorStorm has been fun before, you know? It's just... I don't know.
It seems like
it's sad.
It seems like in a racing game, if there's one little thing that kind of holds you up in a race, it's going to ruin your experience in a race, and maybe for that entire track, if you ever play it again.
Oh, well.
Well, I would love to join with you guys with your Portal 2 planning later this week, but I have Conduit 2 to work on and try to find someone to play online with.
Yeah, good luck with that.
So
I think I'll have better luck than you with MotorStorm Apocalypse with PSN being down.
You make a valid point.
So have you ever played the first Conduit?
I did not. I read the reviews about it and decided that as much as I wanted a shooter that used motion the Wii remote, I didn't want to pay the money for it.
Yeah, well, Sean and I were talking earlier this week, actually, and I think it's interesting. You know, High Voltage kind of came out of nowhere with the first Conduit, and they were just like, look at this cool thing we're working on. And, you know, it seemed kind of, you know, to most people it was just like, whoa, look at this cool thing this group is doing. But it's that company has made a lot of really bad games.
What have they worked, aside from the Conduit, and then I think they've made a couple of other games.
You want to hear their most recent game, besides Conduit?
What is it?
It's a game based off the old claymation Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer movie.
Wow.
Came out last Christmas. It was a full resale game with 4 minigames in it.
That's amazing.
It seems like, you know, they've done the Conduit, and they're now the Conduit 2, and they've done some WiiWare games, and those are at least interesting.
Yeah.
But it's just, they've spent all this time doing contract work, essentially, for people, making the absolute worst versions of things you'd want to. It's kind of sad. But it's one of those things where we should have looked at it and seen that they don't make great games generally, even if they have amazing concepts and maybe a cool, you know, game designer here and there. They just don't execute things very well.
Yeah, it looks like the last decent game or game I've heard anyone say good things about, for the most part, was Harvey Birdman for the Wii.
That was an okay game.
And that one was a good one.
Yeah.
And they made that one. That's the last one that they made that was any good.
I mean, honestly, the first Conduit was an okay shooter. I think because of the motion controls, it garnered more attention.
Mm-hmm.
But it was such a generic game. If that game had come out on 360 or PS3, you know, probably nobody would have paid any attention to it. Like, nobody paid attention to the Conduit 2, so I guess things come full circle. I know you haven't played the first, but how are the motion controls? Do they seem responsive to you? Do they seem like they work? Is that?
I don't know. I'm going to pick him up for the first time after we get off of this.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, he's been knee-deep in Super Monkey Ball 3D, which
and Fire Emblem.
An unenviable position.
I've been playing Fire Emblem to get balance from Super Monkey Ball.
Always a good choice.
The other game I was playing was Back to the Future Episode 4.
I still have the first episode on my desktop, just sitting there waiting for me to play it, but I haven't gotten.
You should play it. The first one's good. What's your opinion of the whole Sam and Max thing?
Oh, I haven't played the last season of it, but I love the first two seasons a lot.
Well, that's basically the same game.
Oh, all right.
You know, as much as this wants to be like a Back to the Future thing, it's the most traditional, like Telltale, tried and true game you've ever seen. They don't really take many risks with Back to the Future. I understand why. It's obviously their game that is just going to sell really well no matter what.
And they want to try to respect the license as much as possible.
Yeah. And at least, you know, with the first episode, you may see some things. I'm going to try not to spoil it. Mm-hmm. Though, you know, really at this point, you should know about the first episode, or at least the movies.
I know about the movies. I've seen the movies many times.
But yeah, they add some characters, which is, that seems awkward. But at least they're relatives of characters that were in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the things set in 1931, so it's kind of like that generation between the 1955 Back to the Future and like the 1885 Part 3 thing going on. But it's unexplored, and I get why they want to do that, but it just feels almost like a fanfic. But, you know, it's written by some of the same people, and it's growing on me, but I have to say that in episode 4. But one is good. One is good.
All right, well, I'll definitely give it a try and see if I want to continue the series, but I'm kind of getting sick. I mean, I love point-and-click adventure games. I grew up playing them. I grew up with Monkey Island and all the Tim Schafer classics and a lot of the Sierra adventure games. But I don't know. The Telltale style is starting to wear a bit thin, at least in my
opinion. I agree.
So
I agree.
That's why I've kind of been wary about it, because I don't want to play it and then just be super disappointed with it. Because I love Back to the Future. Like, the first movie is one of my favorites, and I just kind of don't want that. I kind of just imagine the perfect Back to the Future game, and I just want to keep that image in my head. I don't want to play the game and then be let down or anything.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's why I'm so excited about Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah, Jurassic Park.
Oh, man.
Seems like such a huge departure for them.
Yeah, well, I hope it is. I really hope it's a huge departure for them. I mean, gotta give Telltale credit. They've done things like Puzzle Agent and Hector Badge of Carnage, which Justin just reviewed for us. And they're really trying to do some different things while still keeping with what they know best. I hope Jurassic Park really is, you know, different in a good way.
Yeah, it seems more like Heavy Rain-ish.
Oh, that's it's going to be tough for them to make a Heavy Rain-ish game and have it be good. Just because you can make fun of the voice acting and make fun of, you know, a couple of the story choices in Heavy Rain, but just the execution of that story was really top-notch.
It was, definitely. And it seemed like from what they showed, I think what I've seen from earlier in the year, they delayed it since, I think it's coming out in the fall now. But,
right.
It seemed kind of rough, but maybe it's a good thing they delayed it, but basically it looks so much different. It doesn't have the typical Telltale animation style and everything. It looks more realistic, and it has lots of quick time events, but it doesn't seem to hit you over the head with them. It kind of sprinkled in every so often. I don't know. It seems like it could be a nice departure. They can clean up some of the technical problems I saw with it.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed, you know. I hope it'll end up being good. All right, when we come back, we will give you our progress report for the year so far with our biggest surprise, biggest disappointment, and our game of the year to date. Stay tuned. Progress report the year so far. We've already done this in text, but it's a little more fun to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So, biggest surprise of the year. Sean, we'll start with you.
Oh, boy. Gotta be the fact that I liked Ghost Trick as much as I did.
Those games really do seem to come out of nowhere. I mean, there's a group of fans that tends to know about whether they'll come out before then, but, like, you know, you're talking about, like, Phoenix Wright-ish things, and, like, Ghost Trick tried a lot of interesting things.
And for the most part, they all worked out pretty well. I didn't really know much about it before it came out. I heard that it was coming out, and that it was a kind of an adventure game / visual novel, and that it was made by the people that did Phoenix Wright. So I'm like, okay, I'll try it out.
Yeah, we seem like we're having a lot of those good ones lately.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, 999 was interesting. Like, it was, for a little bit there, it was just kind of Phoenix Wright or nothing, but we're starting to see, I mean, there was Hotel Dusk, and, I mean, we could get into all that, but it seems like there really are a lot of those now, because the DS really did that genre well when people started to catch on to it as the system died.
Yes. I think the next one I'm looking forward to, though, is the Phoenix Wright Spencer Layton crossover.
Ah, yes.
That'll be really good. I just can't imagine that going wrong. I don't know. It just seems like the perfect project for a handheld.
All right, Andrew, what was your biggest surprise?
It was a little Xbox Live Arcade game called The Dishwasher Vampire Smile. The original came out. Not many people know about it. At least I don't think so. I don't remember hearing that much about it. But it was a little side-scrolling hack-and-slash type game. And it was made by just a group of a really, really small team. It started out with one person. I think they're up to four now. And this is the sequel to that. It's really, really, really fun. It has a lot of basic gameplay from what you'd expect of this kind of game, but it just has a really great style to it. They just deliver the kind of stylized action that you'd expect from I can't think of any examples, but it really just takes the style that it works it really well. It has lots of weapons, lots of enemies to fight.
Yeah, I know those developers. They have roots in the indie games, right?
Yeah, they made another game for the indie game market called I Made a Game with Zombies in It.
Right.
Oh, that's so.
I mean, the thing about the Dishwasher, at least the appeal to me, is that it has kind of the personality of an indie game, but it has the polish that makes it worthy of being on the XBLA service.
Yeah, it really is. I think the first one actually started out as a XBLA indie game, and then it made its way as a full retail, XBLA release. So,
yeah.
it's just really fun. I think anyone with 360 should give it a try.
Looks like what you were hoping Shank would be.
Yeah, Shank was a bit disappointing. I don't know. I think I could say that. Yeah, this is definitely what I wanted Shank to be.
Well, my surprise was Monster Tail. Have any of you guys got to play that one yet?
No.
No one listened to me. I say buy it. You don't buy
it.
And it's like, why did I just tell you to buy it? You gotta buy it. Buy the game.
Well, here's my excuse. I haven't played any Metroids or any Castlevanias.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not a big Metroidvania fan. I'm not. That's why it surprised me, was that this game, which seems to just take, like, the Metroidvania formula, you know, strip all those IP out of it and put in a random pet. But the thing is, it really does allow for a lot of customization, which is not something you really get in, like, you know, like a Metroid game. It's just kind of progression based on what you get and when. And there is that, but you can shape where it goes. You can kind of pick your path and build upon it, which makes it really interesting. I'm going through my second playthrough now, and it's just, you know, I've taken the pet to a different, you know, through a different path, and I'm really focusing on different things now, and it feels like I'm playing a different game, even though I'm largely doing the same thing over and over again.
You seem to be one of the only people I've talked to that actually likes it more than Henry Hatsworth, because it's from the same guy.
I admire Henry Hatsworth.
Ah.
You know, I look at that game and I can tell you objectively that is a good game.
Mm-hmm.
I am horrible at it.
I am too.
It's just like I can't do that at the same time, but when I see people who can, it's just like the most amazing bit of gameplay I've ever seen. But anyway, so biggest disappointment, you know, we can't be excited about everything. What came up empty for you?
I guess I can start.
Oh, we already talked about mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, my biggest disappointment is weird because it's a game I still really liked a lot, but it just, considering the developer, it's such a letdown. That's Dragon Age 2. I love the first Dragon Age. I think it's one of BioWare's best games, and despite some lack of polish in some areas. It really, really shined and showcased their storytelling and their writing talents. And I think Dragon Age 2 does that as well, but it really, really falls short in some of the gameplay departments. It's just,
yeah, what I've heard most is that, I mean, I've been playing it too, but I haven't quite gotten through it yet. It's just, I've hit a wall because I think I've seen what others have seen, that it's a lot of recycling.
Yes, that's the biggest problem. Like, you will run into the same dungeons.
Like,
the same
there's
areas.
One architect.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
One architect in that city.
He builds every
house, and it's the same house.
There's the same cave, underground area, the same mountainside. I've been here before, but now this other path is open, and the path I went down before is closed off somehow. It's just, I don't know.
Like the original Mass Effect.
Yeah, that's actually a comparison.
People have talked about that repetition a lot, but I think what hurts it is as soon as you start seeing that repetition, like when that starts to sink in that you're seeing the same things over and over, the story kind of falls apart. You know, these characters are interesting, but
what you do
is just like, fetch quest again. Kill these guys for me. Like, why do I need to do this anymore? Apparently, like, aren't I this really rich guy that, like, has all he needs? Like, I don't understand.
What I admired about it is it took the story that, the story from the first Dragon Age is all about, oh, you're this chosen hero meant to save the world, etc. But the sequel, it's much more personal. It's all about your character in this one town of Kirkwall.
Yes.
I mean, it seems that by the end of the game, without spoiling anything, it seems to be growing into something bigger, which will probably lead to the third game. But
I
liked where they were taking the story. It's just by the end of it, it just kind of stops, and it feels like everything you did up to that point was for nothing. And that's the worst thing you can do in an RPG, is just make the player feel like everything he had done was just meaningless.
You know, if a game's going to be a disappointment, at least it's a disappointment that still makes you want to buy the next one.
This is true. This is very true.
But yeah, my disappointment was Pilot Wings Resort, and I feel really bad about this because I'm sure you guys have known, basically I yelled Rocket Belt every time I possibly could for the past year and a half.
Yes.
As soon as I saw, you know, there's going to be a new Pilot Wings, because I love the original, and I'm not too hot on the 64 version. I know people like that a lot, but I don't know, there's a certain charm to the original Super Nintendo game.
I love the original as well.
Yeah, I didn't even know that there was a Super Nintendo one until you guys mentioned it.
Ah, oh, that hurts me. Hurts me inside. It feels like somebody took the gameplay and then left all the charm out, which it makes a lot of sense considering these are the guys that made Monster Truck. And then they made Monster Truck again with a rocket belt and then called it Pilot Wings. It's just that. It's still a fun game. Like, it's fun enough that makes it disappointing. That it just could have had that special something that the original relied upon.
A lot of people complain it's really short and just kind of get everything you need from it in a couple of hours and then you're kind of done with it.
Finally, our game of 2011 part one, which is kind of just our way of showing, you know, what our front runner is right now. I know last year we had this thing where sometimes we would pick our games of each part of the year and then our game of the year wasn't even any of those three. you know, it happens. But it's an interesting way of thinking, you know, how the year so far is defined, really. But yeah, so Sean, what was your pick?
Mine was Shogun 2.
Right.
It was that or Ghost Recon Shadow Wars.
Yeah, you're honestly really into the original Shogun, weren't you?
Yeah. The Shogun, the first Shogun, my grandpa actually bought me for like $5 six or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was instantly addicted to the Total War series. I loved real-time... I love tactical games, and I love turn-based strategy games, and it combines the two in a way that doesn't suck.
So for you, this was a bit of a return to form, wasn't it?
It was. I haven't played the last few Total War games because I didn't think my computer was strong enough. Apparently it is, because Shogun 2 is the most graphically challenging from what I've heard of all of them, and I was still able to play it. But, it takes the original and makes it modern and better in every respect.
So, yep. Have you played...
Also, the battles suck. I can't do the tactics for them.
Have you played every Total War game from the original Shogun on at this point, then?
I did not play Napoleon or Empire, but I played all the others.
Yeah, the only one I've played is Rome Total War, which is a lot of people consider one of the best, at least until Shogun 2 came out, and I really enjoyed that game.
It felt the most like Rome compared to any of the others.
That's great news.
Andrew, we've already talked about your game of the year so far, but if you want to rant and rave about Portal 2 for another 30 seconds, go ahead.
If I were to talk about it anymore, I would need to get into spoiler territory, so I'm just going to say it's amazing. Everyone, buy it if you can. Yeah, that's it.
I already bought it, but I'm probably the only person that bought it on the 360.
Well, you know what? You can play it online, so.
Yeah, you can.
At least you have that over the PS3, guys.
That's something I actually had Xbox Live Gold, which I don't.
Oh, well. Then you can just play the game.
It's
great no matter what console you have it for, so just enjoy it.
Yeah, it's great that they're actually doing, you know, they've just announced the free DLC that is also going to be for the 360, which I don't think people really expected, but that's good.
I do have one question for you about Portal 2, without spoiling anything. Is the music as good as it was in the first one?
Are you talking specifically about like the ending song?
Yeah,
this has kind of been a topic of debate between me and my friend as of late, but I think the ending song is better than the one in the first, but it's not as funny. So it depends on, if you're looking for a funnier song, then you might be disappointed, but I think as a song, it's better.
I think that's a metaphor for the game in general, you know, that it's not this little unique thing, you know, that everyone's going to rave over, but it's a more fleshed out thing that may, you know, be a little more replayable.
I'm
fine with that.
I can't say anything more. But there's actually something else music related that happens before the ending song that is even better than the ending song. So just look forward to that. That's all I'm going to say.
But yeah, so, all right. My game of the year so far was Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Shadow Wars, also known as the reason to own a 3DS.
That good, huh?
Well, I mean, there's no other reason to own a 3DS.
Not right now, at least.
Yeah, not right now.
There will be.
I love games like that. I love games like, you know, Advance Wars, Fire Emblem, all these little tactical things. And Ghost Recon's really cool, which really is something that the genre hasn't had for a while. It's simultaneously good, and it kind of feels cool to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, the whole thing just feels like a living board game. You know, like it's like you're looking down on these little pieces as they're like kind of alive and there's smoke going everywhere, and it's just an interesting experience. And then you focus on these six characters, and actually for a game like this, you usually don't get much character development, but there's actually some interesting things going on in that game. And
so how does this I don't know anything about this except it's called Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Shadow Wars. And apparently it's made by some of the same guys that made XCOM, which
yeah,
I love.
It's made by the designer of XCOM.
Okay, alright. That's what I was
saying. So it feels a little XCOM, but I definitely think it's more Fire Emblem with guns. You also always have like a squad of six or less that you're developing, you're kind of leveling up a little bit, and you're equipping with weapons, and that, you know, you're following this little group around. Which kind of works, because these games always have kind of like a 3 or 4 versus 30 kind of approach to it. But while the Ghost Recon license seems kind of, you know, pasted on, the whole thing about the, you know, the Ghost, the Special Ops teams, is that really you're supposed to be able to do things like this with a small number of people. So it kind of works. I mean, I haven't been the biggest fan of the main Ghost Recon series, but...
Yeah, I haven't either.
But this game is so good, it makes me kind of want to play those.
You play a shooter?
I am going to play a shooter. It happens occasionally. You know, put it in casual, co-op with someone who knows what they're doing. But, yeah, I'll play a shooter occasionally.
So here's a question for you. I've played a good bit of Shadow Wars, but I haven't had this happen yet. I don't know if you did.
Yeah.
When they die, what happens? Or when a character dies?
That is a good question. I have made sure not to have anyone die.
Yes, I have too. I was afraid I would lose them.
No, I don't want anyone to die. Yeah, I mean, I get the feeling that they just like go back into reserves. You know, you just have to complete the mission without them. I can't imagine
them, I guess.
You losing one of the five people. That would, I mean, how would you even do that game?
That would cripple you for a long time.
That would be amazing, though, because it's just, like, if those guys are so integral in, you know, a huge part of the story, I mean... if you lose one of them, they would make the story change and everything. But I think I'm making this game out to be more grand than it probably is. But that would be
An interesting first effort. But they've said that if it sells well enough, that they're going to make a sequel. And so...
So everyone buy it.
Right, except for we already own it. So that's how
it
works.
I can buy it, I just won't be able to play it.
That's fine. I'm okay with this. Or you could just, you know, if it's cheaper, you could just mail, like, a stack of cash to, you know, the
developer.
Ubisoft check or whatever.
And say four Shadow Wars, please make two.
Yes. It's like, I could buy this and you'd get, like, $6. Instead, here's $20. I want you to make a sequel. That would be an interesting way to do it. But anyway. But so, those are our games so far. We'll see how the rest of the year goes. But so that wraps up our return edition of the podcast. On behalf of Sean and Andrew, I'm Graham, and thanks for listening.